wasn't but a couple weeks ago, I thought Ryan Goodwin had preached my lesson for me. So I just went ahead and used his slide deck here. He preached a lesson entitled, Are You Invested? And I want to continue on that thought with the idea of, are you investing? There is a little difference there. It seems to be something that's on my mind lately. Certainly the idea of investing and retirement planning and things of that nature. I remember once I went into a retirement planning seminar. I was about 40 years old. And I went in and sat down, and they came over to me and said, are you in the wrong place? This is a retirement seminar. And I said, well, yeah, that's why I'm here. And they just thought that was odd that someone of my age would go to a retirement seminar. Well, I think we're both surprised by that. But I think this lesson will hopefully illustrate some points about that. Lately, Chris Moore also talked about some ideas about retirement planning. And so maybe it's on more people's mind. I know Rick is getting ready to. And so the lesson, though, is not really about retirement, even though we will talk about that as a backdrop. This lesson is about being invested. So what does it mean to be investing? To invest in God, to invest in his work. Let's look at a couple of passages that might illustrate that. The first thing is in Luke 14, 25 through 28, we're told to calculate the cost. So we understand there's a cost associated with being a Christian. And so there's something that has to be done in that. We also know that we are to place our treasures in heaven. So we know that we're putting something in heaven, some sort of investment in heaven that we will later on go retrieve. One of my favorite passages about financially related things in the Bible, and by the way, there are a lot of financial statements and references in the Bible, Matthew 6:38, give and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return. And that's a statement of checks and balances, of gains and losses. And it says that if you will give to God, God will give you back. The thing in this situation is no matter what we give him, even though it will only be our best, which isn't a lot of times, he will overflow us with his generosity. And so calculating the cost, looking at what we're doing, how we're investing is an important thing. In James chapter 2 and verse 5, it says, listen, my beloved brethren, did not God choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom? So we are to be rich. We are to be heirs, which he promised to those who love him. So we have a promise awaiting us. And so we're going to talk about investing as a backdrop to understand that a little bit more. So when we talk about investing spiritually, we want to look at putting our treasures in heaven. We want to talk about being materially participating in our Christianity, being involved and doing the things that God expects or wants and needs us to do in his kingdom. So one of the things that we learned in James chapter 1, verses 23 through 25, is that we're to be not just a hearer of the word, but a doer. And we're to look into the mirror of introspection. As we look into that mirror, it says that we are to look at ourselves, our natural faces in the mirror. And the problem that men have is once we have looked at him and gone away, we have immediately forgotten what kind of person he was. But one who intently looks at the perfect law of liberty and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does. So we're to look at ourselves, we're to have introspection on what we're doing. And many times the picture here illustrates the way we do it. We look in the mirror and we see something completely different than the person staring back at us. And so that's an invalid way of evaluating ourselves and looking into this perfect law of liberty. So we've got to correct that. We've got to fix the way we look in the mirror so that we see a true picture of ourselves. And with that true picture, we can make corrections. But when we look in a mirror, and this seems somewhat obvious, but when you're looking in a mirror as you're standing in your bathroom area, what is it you're looking for? Are you looking to see if your hair's the wrong color that day? Or is your nose on the wrong side of your face? These are not things we look for. So there are certain things that we are supposed to look for. And so it's not necessarily a given that we should look at everything, but there are certain things God wants us to observe and he wants us to look at. And as we look in that mirror, what we see are the attributes of God. We see things like joy and peace and patience. We see the attributes of God. We see his virtues. And we look at ourselves to see if those are actually living in us, if we're actually using those things. So we use God's word to help us do this introspection. One of the key things in God's word that helps us do that are parables. Parables give us a way to observe our behaviors and to understand what we need to know. As we compare our lives against a parable, a lot of times a parable will give us some examples of this kind of person and that kind of person, or this kind of activity or that kind of activity. And then we go down that list and we say, well, that's who I am. And once you can do that, then you can go see what kind of person I am. And that helps us with that introspection. It helps us to understand what we're like by looking at the people portrayed in the stories, and it gives us a way of seeing ourselves. It says in Matthew 13 and verse 10 through 13 that parables are only for those who want to understand. They're for those who want to look and understand what's really going on. So we can use these. So let me give you an example. If we look at the 10 parables, or the parable of the 10 virgins, we see two different groups of people, one that's prepared and one that's not. And we look at ourselves and say, which category do we fit into? Are we of the unprepared nature, or are we of the prepared nature? We may look at the parable of the talents and say, are we someone who just takes what God's given us and just doesn't use it? We just bury it in the ground? Or are we someone who takes those talents and gains more from it? Which kind of person are we? And from that, we can gauge what we're doing. So we can use parables to help us understand. So we're going to, I want to look at an article that I saw this week and give you some information about this idea of investing and why this serves as a good backdrop. So I'll try to read most of this since the print's a little small here, but there's an article about millennials, and those are the younger generation. The title was in USA Today, and it says that millennials want to save, but many can't. And it says that millennials are stuck between having a financially responsible mindset and having the resources and discipline to pull off long-term results. That doesn't sound like just millennials to me. That sounds like a lot of us. Some millennials prioritizing meaningful experiences likely taking away money that could otherwise go to retirement savings or down payment for a house, says a noted person here. So they took a survey of 1,001 people ages 18 to 34, and they revealed the disconnect between the way millennials think about their finances and what they're actually able to achieve. This is looking in the mirror and seeing something back that's not accurate. They're seeing a disconnect. They're saying that they're good at living within their means, but they're living paycheck to paycheck. Those things don't balance. What they're saying and doing don't really match up. The data also shows that millennials are much more focused on short-term goals. While that may be in part due to seeking out instant gratification, it's also reflective of lifestyle circumstances, says another notable person. When a millennial is asked what represents having financially made it, 70% of them say that being able to afford anything, like travel and treating friends and family to things, was their definition of success. 40% said it was having a career that does good for others, while just 24% said it was rising to the top of their profession, and 15% said it was making a lot more money than their parents made. So those are the definitions of success. So the main thing here, though, is when you look at this, there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect between what they see themselves doing and what they're not doing. Now, I want to point out here that I'm not trying to teach a lesson about whether you should plan for retirement or not. This doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just using this as a backdrop to teach a lesson from. However, when we look at being a Christian, that's not optional like retirement planning may be. But retirement planning does have a lot of attributes that are very similar to what we need to do for eternity planning. And so we're going to use this as a backdrop for our lesson. If you really look at the truth of the matter, and this is why I said millennials aren't unique in this. If you look, they looked at 100 people who started out working at the age of 25, and by the age of 65, only 1% of those people would be considered wealthy. Only 4% would have enough money stowed away for retirement. 3% would still be working. 63% are dependent on Social Security, friends, relatives, or charity, and then the other 29% are already dead. So that's not one group here. This is a large span. So there's a fairly large disconnect within society about what constitutes retirement planning. And when you get to the end, are you ready? Are you ready or not? And so what we see here is basically 5% are ready. 3% just keep working because that's what they have to do, and the rest are relying on someone else. That's not a great position to be in, especially when you look at it from a spiritual side. We can't find ourselves, 63% of us, relying on something else to get us into heaven. So this isn't just a problem for one group. So what I want to do tonight is I looked at a bunch of parables and I was trying to find one that would give the backdrop, but instead there was four or five here that stressed the points I was trying to make, and I'm going to combine all of these parables and create another parable that discusses this idea of retirement and of being prepared. So we're going to look at the tree and its fruit in Matthew 7, the parable of the sower, the parable of the laborers in the vineyard, the parable of the wedding feast, the parable of the 10 virgins, the talents, the parable of judgment, and then some stuff out of Revelation. We're just going to combine all those ideas in which, rather than reading a lot of scriptures out of these, I'm going to just refer to them, and then as you listen, you should hear attributes of all of those different parables. So what we're going to do is create another parable that discusses all of these ideas. And as with all parables, we must be very careful that we don't try to extend these beyond what's being taught here. So again, this lesson is not about whether physical retirement is necessary or not. It's really to show what we need to be doing in our spiritual life. Many times in this lesson, I'm going to switch between the physical attributes and the spiritual attributes, so I hope not to confuse you in that, but try to keep up with that, and I'll try to be specific as I do that. So this is the parable. There was a certain financial advisor, it's not Craig Ritter, who called 30 people to a unique financial seminar. This is similar to what we see in these parables. There was people called. Only 6 of these people showed up for the seminar. 5 of them were 25 years old, that was the target audience, and 1 was 40 years old. These were people of all walks of life and all different sorts of attitudes. And so many were invited and many were represented, but only a few came. That disappointed the financial advisor, but he decided to go ahead and conduct this seminar anyway. So first of all, he began to explain the program to these people. So they were going to be asked to participate in a unique financial program. They would be given a manual that would explain everything that they need to be and everything they need to do, and that would be similar in a spiritual sense to the Bible, giving us the instructions that we need to do. So everyone would be asked to, everybody would be given $25,000 to put into certain investments, and they would be able to choose how they wanted to do that, and even if they wanted to do that. Each would be given a job, making $25,000 a year in their field of interest. They would be able to invest a portion of their salary towards their retirement, and their choice of how to do that would be theirs. They would be given free financial advisement for their lifetimes. They did have a few things they had to agree to. They must agree to move to a retirement community at retirement. They must be required to attend an assessment at age 65, and additional information would be given to them when they come back for that assessment. So as we look at this, we can see some parallels here. The money and the jobs and everything being given to is similar to what God does for us. He's paid the price for our salvation. He's given us everything we need. And all we have to do is accept. And that's the way this program worked. All they had to do is accept, and they would be able to participate in this program. The financial advising, they would be able to talk to this advisor anytime they wanted. We have prayer that allows us to do the same thing. And we'll talk about the rest of these later. One person in this group of six that showed up turned down the offer, said he wasn't interested, and the other five agreed to do it, and the seminar was dismissed, and they all went on their way. So 35 years later or so, 40 years later, they all showed up. Now, at this particular advisement meeting, all 30 had to come. Nobody was going to be allowed to stay out of this meeting, even though the first meeting was optional. This meeting is not. You should see the parallel there to judgment. This meeting agenda, first of all, they were going to do an analysis of their efforts. So he was going to look at how they did and just look at that at face value. Then he'd provide them some additional information, and then a follow-up assessment will be conducted. So first, the financial advisor addressed the 24 that didn't even show up, and he immediately dismissed them. He told them that they had nothing to assess, they had nothing to evaluate. He told them to be seated over on the side and wait for final comments. So as we note here, there's going to be a two-part assessment. They're going to do one pass and then a second. So first of all, they addressed the one person that declined the offer. This person was also immediately dismissed because he had nothing to evaluate, except this person asked for permission to present his case because he thought he had something he could show to the financial advisor. Of course, in this, we should see Jesus as being that evaluator. So he wanted to present his case and show how he had done. And then once he was done, the other five would present their cases. And so the financial advisor began to explain to them that in this was the salary they were going to start with at age 25, and by the time they got to age 65, they would all be making around $81,000 a year. And then in retirement, they would start out with a reduced amount, and that would grow up to $130,000. So he explained that the trick to this whole process is, how do you make enough money in this window to pay for everything in this window? And that's not a simple thing to do. You start at a small amount here, and you're not even, you know, it isn't very long before you're already spending at the rate you were last working at. So it's a big job trying to get ready for this retirement. So the first person, this is the person that turned down the program offer. He presented how he had done his own investing on his own. And so he presented his first chart, and his first chart said that, you know, by the time I hit retirement, I was making $1.3 million. Or I had saved $1.3 million. That's pretty good. And so then the financial advisor took that, and he projected it forward and said, well, by the time you get to age 95, you'll still have $3.4 million left. And the man felt pretty confident in himself, and the financial advisor asked him to have a seat and wait for the final comments that would be coming later. So I tried to make these figures as accurate as I could so you could actually see how some of these things work, because it's that way with God as well. So this man, he was actually interested enough to come to the seminar, but he wasn't really interested enough in doing what he was told to do. He had other thoughts about how this should be done, and he went and did it his own way. And in presenting this chart here, he said to the financial advisor, "Haven't I done many wonderful works in your name?" So then the next person, after he was told to sit down and wait, the second person was asked to present. This man stood up and said, "Well, you know, I buried your $25,000 in the ground. I was afraid that you were an exacting man and that you were going to demand a lot from me, so I buried it. But I have your $25,000. This is like the Christian who accepts salvation and he never comes back to do anything with it. He has the attitude that Salvation is something you get once and then you just go away and you don't do anything with it. So he was only interested in things that pertain to him. He wasn't interested in doing anything for Christ. So he came and he presented his chart. And he said, you know, by the time I was 65, I still had your $25,000. And the financial advisor flipped the page and said, and that's all you got to live on, and it won't even last you a year. And so you haven't done well. You have not. You could have at least put the money into a savings account and gained interest. And we hear that in the parable of the talents. He said, I knew you were a hard man. I knew that you sowed where you didn't reap. And he said, this isn't going to last you. You could have at least gotten interest on this money. So he was told to sit down and wait for some final comments. The next person stood up and said, well, I took your $25,000 and I invested it, as you said. I put it in various stocks and bonds, and I made money on that $25,000. I didn't invest any of my earnings, though. I was too busy. Life got to me. I had a lot of bills, a lot of things I needed to get done. And so I didn't have an opportunity to put any of that money in the bank, so I just spent it all. So he doesn't really appear terribly engaged in the process. He doesn't do anything more to attend. This is like the Christian who does that. He appears to attend. He appears somewhat disengaged, not really into doing what God wants him to, but is still wanting to carry the logo of being a Christian. The thing we need to see here is that as he puts the money in the bank or in these investments and he makes a gain on it, and this is similar to what God says to us when he says, you do the work and I'll provide the increase. And so this is the same $25,000 that the man buried in the can and had $25,000. This man simply invested it at 7% and he had $400,000 instead of $25,000. That's a little bit better than what the second man had come back with. So he didn't make any sacrifice, though. He didn't put anything out of his funds or out of his what he made, even though he should have understood that the job and everything that he had was from the financial advisor. Everything that he had was from him. And so that's similar to us. Everything that we have is from God, and he provides it all. And are we using it? Or are we keeping it for ourselves? So he said, well, you saved that much money. That was good. But that's only going to last you for a few years and it'll be gone. And so from a pure retirement perspective, you've done okay, but not very well. And so he was told, have a seat and wait for my final comments. Person number four got up. And this person took the $25,000 as he was instructed, and he invested it. And he took some of his wages, and he invested it also. But he didn't start till he was 30 years old. He was 25 when he was given this offer, and he didn't start till he was 30. And when he hit age 45, he quit. And so this is the example of a person who waits and waits and waits to be a Christian, and they're thinking about it, and they're considering it, but they finally get around to it, and they don't stick with it long enough. And they give up. So after 15 years, he got up gave up, and at that point, he quit investing any of the money. So this person began late, finished early, did nothing in between, and at age 65, he had $160,000 put away for his retirement. And so the financial advisor looked at that and said, well, I've done my analysis, and that'll last you about 2 years. Not very impressive. And so he had some money, but it wasn't going to last. So he, like the rest, was asked to have a seat and wait for final comments. The fifth person took the $25,000 and invested it as he was instructed. He invested his earnings as he was instructed. He also went the extra mile and signed up for additional benefits and additional Social Security and other things of that nature, and did what he could to make this work. So he took every advantage he could. He even took the manual and read it and trying to understand what he was supposed to do. He got to the business of earning, and he never looked back. He didn't quit. So he understood what the ten virgins understood, which was he needed to be prepared. And so he got down to business and did what he could do. So he stood up and presented his data, and he said, well, by the time I hit 65, I had $1.2 million saved. And the financial advisor said, well, that's pretty impressive. And he said, I've done the analysis on that, and you'll have almost $3 million left over when you get to 95. And so you've done well with your part. God has done well by giving you the increase. And you have been richly blessed in what you've done. And see, the plan worked. And this man had much treasure laid up for the future. So, again, this man was asked to sit down and wait for final comments as well. So we have the final person who gets up and he says, you know, when I came to the seminar, I was already 40 years old. I didn't have as much time as the previous guy did. But I did everything that he did, and I took advantage of every opportunity that I could take advantage of. And I saved enough money to have almost $500,000 for retirement. And so he did the analysis and said, well, that'll last quite a bit longer than anybody else's money's last. You've done pretty well with what you've had. From a pure retirement viewpoint, it's not getting you there, but it's you've done pretty well for what you had. So one of the questions we ask at this point is retirement and the shortfalls, is that going to be the same effect as our spiritual, eternal destination? And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. So, just like the rest, he was told to sit and wait final comments. Now we get to the summary assessment, which was put up on the board. And it looked like this. The first person had $3.4 million at age 95, never ran out of money. These others ran out of money early. They had nothing to show at 95. Person number five had money left over, and it was going to continue. And person six had nothing left over. So they gave an account for what they have done. So if we look at this purely from a carnal viewpoint, we would say, well, it looks like person one and person five are in pretty good shape, and they should be the ones that get rewarded for what they have done. But wait, I told you there was additional information, and so we want to cover that now. So he began now to describe this retirement community that was going to be required of them. And he said, well, this requirement community you're going to move into, it has streets paved with pure glass-like gold. It has gates that are made out of pearls, walls of diamonds. There are no health issues in that place. There are no crime. There's no sorrow. There's no night. There's nothing bad there. The health care is so good that you won't die. There will be no death. And so at this point, everybody's saying, well, wait a minute. This is a big problem. Is this good news or is this bad news? Well, he tells them, well, this is bad news for most of you because none of you can afford this community. You don't have enough money to afford it. I don't care how much any of you save, there's not enough for you to even buy your way into this community. Even though some of you saved a great deal, none of you have enough money to not only get in, but you don't have enough money to cover you forever, for all of eternity. But I have good news for you also. So this wasn't the end of the story, and there was additional information that he needed to provide to them. So the financial advisor finally introduces himself. He says, well, I want you to understand this particular program is now your classic retirement program. I provided you with the entrance fee. All you had to do was take it. I provided you with the means to live and to prosper, and all you had to do was accept it. I provided you with the plan that would allow you to reach your goals. All you had to do was follow it. The first thing you needed to do was accept the plan. Five out of six did that. Oh, by the way, my father's name is Warren Buffett. And he's worth about $59 billion. So he has some resources here that he wants to bring into play. So the success criteria for this program had been decided ahead of time. And what the Father had decided was he wanted to demonstrate a certain methodology to the world. He wanted everyone to understand and see that the plan that he had come up with for retirement savings was the best possible plan that was there. And this plan would create the most prepared life, and you would have the best lived life if you would just follow this plan. He already determined the criteria for success. The criteria was that it didn't matter how much any of you saved. All you have to do is follow the plan. And many of the people in the room said, "Whoa, I wish I would have known that." Now, two of them did because they read the manual and they understood that that was going to be the criteria. So all you have to do is follow the plan. And you know what? My Father knows if you did or didn't. Now, that's kind of where the parable falls apart at this point, because there is no man that can know that, but we know that God does. We know that God knows if we're following the plan faithfully or not. So he said, everyone who meets the criteria for success, I'm going to pay for your eternal retirement. I'm going to pay for the entrance into the retirement community that I've explained to you. And I'm going to pay for as long as you live, which will be forever. I don't care how much you saved. I will provide you with my grace. So, such is the nature of heaven. So the grace of God, as we know, will close the gap between the things that we deserve and the things that we will get. And God will provide that for us. So now it's time for the detailed review, part two. Now that we know this, we have to go back through each one and look at them with a completely different viewpoint. So the 24 were addressed, and basically they had nothing, still had nothing to assess. They had not done anything. They had not even shown up in the initial meeting, so they were told, "Depart from me." Then he turned to the six that came to the meeting, and he said, "Well, I've looked over your information, but to be honest with you, I only wanted to see whether you participated or not. I wanted to see if you were interested or not. I wanted to see if you got in and did anything or not, or whether you just sat back." So let's go back through and look at each one. So they began with person number one, and the evaluation was a lot more detailed this time. And he said, "You had the same opportunities that everyone else had. You came to the seminar, you were offered all the same thing. You could have had all of it, but you turned it down. You rejected my offer, just like a lot of people in the Bible are rejecting God's offer. You had an attitude problem. You did it your own way. You wouldn't listen to God, you wouldn't listen to how he wanted it done. And you loved this world and the things that were in it more than doing what God wanted you to do. And yes, you were rich, and you had a lot of money left over, even in your retirement, but you were not rich towards God. You were only rich towards yourself. And so you should have made some fixes." So he gave him advice so that fixes could be made for those coming along behind. And he told them that, first of all, you missed the entire goal. The way you were asked to do it, if you would have just accepted it, if you would have taken the generous gift that was offered and done what you were asked to do, everything would have been fine. So the final assessment from this is you didn't follow the plan. There's nothing I can do other than tell you that you didn't follow the plan. God would have given you the increase if you would have let him do it his way. You would have been just as well off in the financial scenario, but you've missed it all. And so you need to be... you need to be removed, so go with the other 24. Depart into outer darkness, for I never knew you. And he was thrown there and left there. So he wasn't ready. Even though he thought during his life he was doing a lot of things to be ready, he was doing all the wrong things to be ready. So person number two, I guess, and in this case, the question we have to ask ourselves is this us? Will we accept God's offer to provide for us, or will we reject it? And will we say we've got a better way to do this? We'll do it our way. Is that the kind of person we'll be when we look into the mirror? Was that what we'll say? The second person And this was the person who put the money in the can and buried it in the backyard. Said, you had the same opportunities as everyone else. You accepted, but you didn't participate in any of it going forward. Your attitude was that you knew that it was that I was going to be tough on you. And the outcome was that you had nothing more to show than what I gave you in the first place. So he gave him some advice on what he should have done. You should have used what I gave you to gain more, and you shouldn't have been afraid of the outcome. You should have cared more about what I wanted you to do. There's only one outcome, and that is you didn't follow the plan. And since you didn't follow the plan, you, like the other 25, shall depart from me into eternal punishment. And we're going to take away even what you have, and we're going to give it to the others so that they will have more. And we know they'll do something with it. And so you're not ready. You can't afford the price for the reward. So in this case, is this us? Are we the person who's too afraid to do what God asked of us? Or are we just don't care enough to do what God has asked from us? The third person was then questioned, and he said, you also had the same opportunities as everyone else. Your response to this opportunity was that you you were accepted it, and you began investing in the beginning, but you didn't do anything to participate thereafter. You took the entrance price, you became a Christian, and you didn't do anything after that. You wouldn't invest any of your life into what was happening. So the attitude you have was, I will accept your offer, but my life is mine to live, and I will determine how to do it. We've seen that attitude in these parables. The cares of this life have taken over my focus. So the outcome, he had little to show for his effort, and there wasn't much there that could be done. He was given some advice. You should have understood that being a Christian is not a title, but it's a lifestyle. You should have grown instead of remaining a babe in Christ. You should have taken what you were given and made more. But in the end, you didn't follow the plan. You were given the plan, but you didn't follow it. You were too selfish with your life. Your focus was wrong. Growth is as important as beginning the journey. Doing God's work is our job, and there's nobody else to do it if we don't. So you're not ready. Will you claim to be a Christian and do nothing to grow? Is that our attitude? Is that us? As we look into the mirror of introspection, do we find that lines up more closely with us? Person number four was then questioned. And again, he was told, you had the same opportunities as everyone else. Your response to the opportunity was, I'm too busy right now. I didn't start right away. And then when you did get started, you quit way too soon. Your attitude was, I'll accept your offer when it's convenient, and I'll do it as long as it's convenient, and when it's not, I won't. The outcome was he had squandered his life by keeping it for himself, and he didn't do what he was told to do. He loved this world, and he loved the things in it, and he got distracted, and he lost his focus. So he was given some advice about what he should have done to fix it. He was told that you should have been either hot or cold, but you shouldn't be lukewarm. Pick a side. Either you're going to follow me or you're not. Starting and not finishing will make you unfit for the kingdom of heaven. You can't put your hand to the plow and then turn back. Remain faithful unto death, and you will be given the crown of life. So his final assessment, like the rest, you didn't follow the plan. Depart from me and go into eternal judgment, and even what you have will be taken away. So he also was found not ready. He couldn't afford to be in heaven as well. Is this us? Will we wait to get started? Will we give up too early? Will we be on again, off again? Will we be faithful? Will we continue? Or will we let the cares of this life take over? The fifth person was then queried. And he was told, well, you had the same opportunities as everyone else also. This was the person who invested his money well and did everything that he could, took advantage of every opportunity, and he began when he was young. He started right away as soon as he was given the offer, and he fully committed and he never quit. His attitude was that I trust your advice and I'll do everything I can to make this plan successful. The outcome was he had grown and he had gained more and he was prepared. So his advice was, well done, good and faithful servant. His assessment was, you had followed the plan. You did what I asked you to. You may not have been the richest one on the board, but you did what I told you to. You were able to attend the wedding feast, as we learned in one parable. He was rewarded for his labor, as in another parable. You'll be on the right hand of God and get an inheritance, as we learn. You'll be able to enter the kingdom of heaven. Much good can be done, as is observed in your outcome. For you see, the gain that he had gotten was gain for God, and he had a lot. He had a lot to show for himself. Not that that was making the difference in any way, shape, or form, but he had still done a lot of good for God. So he was richly rewarded for his faithfulness and his obedience. He was ready. He followed the plan. He was like the virgins who had oil in their lamp, and he was prepared. Is this you? Will you start early in life? And will you never quit until the end? Well, some people don't have that opportunity, like the 40-year-old. And he was questioned next and was told, you had the same opportunities of everyone else, except that you were older. Your response was that you started. Yes, it was later, but you started. And you were fully committed and you never quit. Your attitude was like the last guy. I trust your advice and will do everything. The outcome was the same. The advice was the same. And in the final assessment, he said, even though you started later, God was pleased to reward you equally. And so he followed the plan. So even though he started late, he didn't make as much money, he didn't gain as much fruit for God, he was still rewarded richly because of what he had done. This is so much better of a plan than if we were told, go work for your salvation. Go figure out how much you can achieve, and if you do a little bit better than Jason, or you do a little bit better than Alan, you're in, he's out. This is so much better than that. So will you start now? And will you never quit until the end? Is this you? What will your attitude be about the offer that's been presented to you? So in summary, we've looked in the mirror. We've looked at various attitudes towards planning for our retirement. Really planning for our eternal retirement. We looked at those so that we could know when we look in the mirror of introspection what sort of person we are. The same attitudes we saw for each man can affect each one of us. We need to know who we are and we need to know how we're going to live our lives. So who are you like? So as we look in the mirror, we need to know how we're going to live. We need to make a plan. We need to work the plan. We need to measure against the plan. And we need to make corrections against that plan. And retirement planning might, some of the attitudes and things in there, we might help us to understand better about how we're doing and what we should be doing. And as we get this plan going and we find ourselves off course, we need to make corrections. While it's never too late to start, it is dangerous to wait to start. You may never get the opportunity. So who are you like? Have you accepted his offer? Are you not fully invested and therefore not fully investing? Are you squandering your opportunities for Christ? Are you wasting the talents and the abilities he's given you? Are you on again? Are you off again? Are you here sometimes and not other times? Or are you fully committed? According to this plan, you need to commit yourself fully to Christ and be faithful unto death. And then the reward will be provided. And that reward will be great. It will be something you can't afford. You can't afford what God has to offer you. But that price has been paid. So we need to know, we need to start now, we need to remain faithful, and we need to be rich towards God every day of this week, every day of this month, every month of the year, every year of our life. And we know from looking at this, we can't earn our salvation. It's not about how much we did or didn't do. It's really whether we followed the plan, whether we were faithful. Were we obedient? Did we do what we were told to do? Did we start when we were told to start? And were we faithful unto death? We will need to give our will over to God's will, and we need to live in a manner that allows his grace to prevail. He will reward us. If you have a need, if your attitudes in any of these areas make you unfit for the kingdom of heaven, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.